We're doing our Pirkei Avos class with the Jewish home class, and being that it's the end of the year, this is the last time we'll be having this class as far as we know this semester. Next Sunday I don't think I will be here, as the way things stand now, it's possible that will change, but right now it doesn't look like we will have class with me, at least. I don't think I will be here next Sunday. Again, if it changes, I'll let you know Bezrat Hashem tomorrow or the next day. So are there any questions now at the end of the semester you guys want to deal with before we move forward?
General questions?
On the Jewish home.
Okay,
so we'll move forward. And if you have questions at the end of class, we'll come back to this.
I was coming to this idea that if your wife is really nasty to you throughout your life, it can spare you from purgatory. So does this mean that maybe you should maybe find a woman who's a little on catty side, like she'll give you a hard time, and then you'll be like, you might be a little miserable when you're married, then you make your side.
Okay, it says you're supposed to start learning Torah with humor, so we did that. Now let's begin. Mishnah, hey, who aya omer? He used to say, Ein bu yereichet, a person who is clean of even the most basic understanding of inhabiting land or even having a livelihood or anything, the most basic, he cannot be fearful of sin. So remember, Bur is not an Amoretz. Amoretz is a guy who's not learned in Torah, but he knows basic decency. He can function with his fellow man. But a Bur is a guy that lacks even basic decency. He's just a non-productive individual. And he cannot be fearful of sin. So here we see that step number one is don't be a Bur. Right? You can't be empty. A person has to first strive for decency. And we expanded on this in the introduction to the Sefer Amidot, that the most basic thing is first have decency, know how to be a functioning human being, functioning in society. Ve'lo am ha'aretz chassid. And a person who's not learned, well, he could fear sin, but he can't be pious. And people get confused. We said 2 points here. Fearful of sin and pious. We said a person who's a boor, a person who lacks the most basic decency, cannot even have fear of sin. A person who's a boor, so he doesn't have derech eretz, he doesn't know how to be honest, he's the worst type of person in society, he cannot be fearful of sin, because he doesn't have an understanding of what sin is, and what society is, and what decency is. So the Mishnah says, Ein boor yereichet. Velo am ha'aretz chassid. One who isn't learned cannot be pious. One of the dangers in life are people who try to be pious and they haven't learned. That's how we end up with a yiftach, who kills his own daughter for the sake of being pious. Chazal gives us a long list in the end of the Talmud in Sota of people who try to be pious and they're harmful to society. The Talmud says you'll find a girl who prays fervently, and really she's covering up for all kinds of things that she's doing in the dark. You'll find a widow that seems to be very fearful of sin, but really there are the most basic things that she's doing improperly. The Talmud says you'll find people who stand in shul and pray and they seem like they're big chassidim. No such thing as a person being pious, being a chassid, if he's not learned. It doesn't work. It's just not possible. A person can have good intent and he could be fearful of sin, but to attain piety involves knowledge. You have to understand, what does God want of you? This past Shabbos, I met someone who told me his wife doesn't eat in the morning. So I said, why doesn't your wife eat Shabbos morning? So he says, well, she hasn't yet heard Kiddush, so she doesn't eat. So I said, doesn't she daven Shacharis usually? Doesn't she daven something? So he said, yeah. So I said, okay, well, if she daven Shacharis, then, Halach says, when you're going to daven Shachris, then you don't yet have a chiyuv to say Kiddush before Shachris. Now women, being that they're not obligated to daven Shachris, are allowed to eat before Shachris Shabbos morning. Do you know of any opinion that argues on that? Because I only know that opinion. I never saw anyone that disagrees. So he said, no, but she feels that's pious. So I can respect that, no problem. If she understands that it's permissible and she's inventing her own piety, fine. You know, there's such a concept not to eat before davening. But if you're nursing and your child needs your milk and you have to have food and you're going to come and tell me, I'm not going to eat because of that before davening because I think it's more pious. Is that really being more pious? The halacha says you're allowed to eat. I don't know of an opinion that forbids it. He doesn't know of an opinion that forbids it. But his wife is going to wait till 1 o'clock in the afternoon till he comes home to make Kiddush because she feels that's more pious. I don't know if that's right. You know, in halacha we have great leniencies to ensure a nursing woman eats and drinks the way she should. Sometimes people are looking to be pious, and that's good. But we have to know, Dom Aretz Chassid, you can't attain piety when you don't know. I met a friend of mine at a simcha, and I see his 1-year-old daughter is covered. It's a broiling hot summer day, and she's wearing tights and this long skirt, and the poor thing could barely crawl because she has a skirt that comes down to her ankles. And I asked him, is everything okay? He says, yeah, why? I said, your daughter's dressed like it's the middle of the winter, and you know, it's summer here. Don't you see she's sweating bullets? So he said, yeah, but don't you want to teach your kids to be tzanua from day one? So I said, no. I said, no, I don't want my daughter to suffer like that. And he sees my daughter walking around, her legs showing, you know, okay, she's not yet one, what do I care? You know, what? She's not yet two, she's not yet three. I am surprised he cares. So I asked him, do you know of any basis for what you're doing? Can you show me any source that says you should do what you're doing? So he says, well, what do you mean? Everything has to have a source? Look, okay, people are... Well, why should a child suffer? You know, what's the chachma here? The girl is suffering. She doesn't know what her body means. She doesn't know how to walk. The girl's crawling and she can't crawl, but her parents decided it's more pious for a 8-9-month-old child to be wearing a long skirt where she's going to fumble around as she's crawling. You know, her feet keep getting caught on the skirt and she's wearing tights like, I don't know. You know, so sometimes I feel like telling people, go invent your own religion. We had a story where a guy was fasting on Yom Kippur. The doctors told him he had a heart condition. He's not allowed to fast. He's risking his life. He said, no, I'm going to fast. So, you know, I asked the guy, tell me, who do you pray to? He said, what do you mean? I said, well, you're not praying to the God I'm praying to, because he told us a series of laws, and one of the laws is you're not allowed to fast on Yom Kippur. So you've invented your own religion. You decided to pray tomorrow, to fast tomorrow. Fine, well, who are you davening to? The Mishnah warns us, if you're not learned, you can't be pious. It's not going to work. The guy has great intentions. Fine. But who said he's allowed to do that? The Torah gives us guidelines. Very often when pregnant or nursing mothers call and ask if they're supposed to fast on one of the fasts that they're not supposed to fast, and I say, no, you're not supposed to fast. And they say, but I want to fast. So I always say an answer that my rabbis used to say, so fast today, don't fast tomorrow. So they say, yeah, but tomorrow's the fast day. So I say what my rabbis used to say. Yeah, you don't have a fast day tomorrow. Chazal said you're not supposed to fast tomorrow. So you're inventing your own fast day, so you pick the day. What difference does it make? It has nothing to do with Chazal's institution. You've decided you're going to invent a fast. Chazal felt it was more important you eat and drink so that your child has what to nurse, or your pregnancy isn't even put in the slightest form of danger. You want to invent your own thing, so what difference does it make? You know, you choose. You're choosing, so you choose. It's a harsh thing to say, but these are harsh circumstances. I was in Shaare Tzedek Hospital a few years ago, and a woman comes in dehydrated. Her son is vomiting, and he eats nothing but nursing. The kid only nurses. He has nothing to eat. And she's asking me, on Yom Kippur, am I allowed to drink? I said, I'll get you the drink, lady. Your child, the doctors don't know what's wrong with him. He's vomiting, he's dehydrating. You're assuming you're going to have enough milk for him. What do you mean, are you allowed to drink? Are you allowed not to drink? That's a question. So I was called from Musaf. Someone stopped me in the middle of davening, because everyone was scared of answering her this halachic question. So I'm in the 10th floor or 8th floor davening Musaf, and she's down in the emergency room, but no one wanted to answer that. Okay, I'm happy everyone's so careful about halacha, but we have to be careful about risking a human being's life. The halacha warns us, you're not going to be pious if you didn't learn. You want to be pious, learn the halachos, and then you'll see where piety applies. And this is a very, very problematic thing, because people have good desires. This stems from a Yetzer Tov. People want to serve Hashem as best as can be, and then they end up really messing up. There was a girl in this community here, Kiryat Moshe, who was orphaned. She had only a mother, and she went into a rebellious stage as a teenager, and she said, I want to buy a motorcycle. I want to ride a motorcycle. So her mother is a very smart lady. She didn't say no. She said, let's go ask Rav Mordechai Elio. Whatever he says, you'll do. So the girl says, fine. You guys know what Rav Mordechai Elio said? He said, wear pants under your skirt and have a good time. Rav Mordechai Elio, I know the family. I heard it firsthand. He said, halachically, just wear pants under the skirt, because sometimes it's going to fly in different places, you know, as you're riding the motorcycle.
It's also safer to wear pants to follow up.
Okay. I could tell you that today she's married to one of the biggest masmidim in Merkaz Arab. Her husband's a tremendous Talmud Chacham. But she had her period where she had her motorcycle. What's the piety in saying no? About 10 years ago, I was arguing with a guy. He told me he's forbidding his daughters to ride a bicycle. I said, and what's the halachic basis to forbid your daughters riding a bicycle? What halacha is it? You know, what are they transgressing? Today, his daughters, I don't know where they're holding and keeping mitzvahs. You know, you want to be pious, no problem, but have a basis. Where are you getting it from? It doesn't feel right. I don't know, you know, for feeling right. It didn't feel right to Yiftach not to slaughter his daughter, so he killed his daughter. If we're working on feelings, we could end up with the most abhorrent way in life. You know, you want to do what's right, you can't just go with feelings. There's a Torah, there's a tradition, there's a halacha. The Mishnah warns us, those good feelings that you want to be pious, rein them in. You have to know, lo amar etz chassid. A person who's not learned cannot be pious. It's not possible. Sometimes he'll get it right, sometimes wrong. You know, it's like shooting in the dark. Yeah?
Where does Sefer Torah come in? Like a fulfilling intention of Torah? Where does it come in? Is that for us to do or for the Rebbeim?
So it is for you to do. At a certain level. When we learned that Mishnah, we discussed that Mishnah has a dual nature. Sometimes we have to do it for ourselves. And it's good to consult over there. But we also discussed over there that Yaakov Avinu took it too far. And you see, his daughter Dina was abducted as a result of what he did. Even when you do a siyag, we said you have to know how far to take it. I'm not contesting that. You're right. There is the concept of doing a siyag. A person has to make his own fence. It's not only for Chazal. A person has to know his own fence. If a person knows he has a weakness, guys are working on being Shomer Negiah when they're dating. So don't put yourself in a situation where it might happen. Don't tell me how halachically there isn't Yichud. We're at her parents' house right now. We all know what could happen at her parents' house. So don't put yourself in that situation. Make sure you date out in a restaurant. Make sure you date out in the daylight. Don't even date at night. Yeah, a person has to make his own fences.
But then to someone looking in from the outside, and they see that someone's going crazy, really, if they have a problem with that certain...
Right, right. I agree. There can be instances where a person has made his own fences, and to him it's the right thing. I agree. That's true. I think it's a point to ponder where we draw the lines in that. I think, though, that in most cases, the fences that a person makes for himself are going to be personal and quiet. They don't have to be overt, and they don't affect other people. And if they do affect other people, then there's room to consider, is it fear? But I definitely agree with you. There will be instances where a person has to make his own fences, isn't it? Right? Right? There can be instances where that's the right thing. I agree. Yeah. Yeah.
If somebody makes his own stringency, does he have to keep by it, or does it? Is it like the head you make? I'm going to keep like this now until I drop dead.
So a person should get accustomed to saying that any stringency I do is bli neder as long as I want to. It's bli neder as long as I want. That way, if one day you don't want to do it, you put it on the side. If one day you know a guy says I'm only eating this and this hechsher, and then one day he'll be out in the Golan and he'll need a different hechsher. So fine, eat that. Yeah.
You said that an aretz can have yivat chet, being the fearful of sin.
But again,
the Amma Aris can be fearful of sin.
Right.
But, so, in Mr. Yisroelin, doesn't he list fear of sin as part of a level of chassidut?
I don't know the Mr. Yisroelin well enough, but I think he means it's a lead-in. It's like it's a stage that leads in, but I have to see it inside. I don't know. The law by Shan Lamed. One who's embarrassed won't learn. A person has to have at least enough to ask questions. And this is an element of modesty. If a person's always worried, he'll be embarrassed when he asks the question and everyone will see what he doesn't know. That's not going to work. A person has to be honest enough to ask what he doesn't know and overcome his embarrassment that people might think, he doesn't know. Ve'lo kapdan milamed, nor can a person who is a kapdan, someone who is very tough, he can't teach. In order for a person to learn, he has to feel like the person who's teaching him is warm to him and is gentle and kind. Chazal say, if you meet a student who's having difficulty getting things down, you should know it's because his teacher is too tough with him. He's not giving him a warm greeting and a warm feeling during the learning. And he who deals too much in business can't get too smart. If a person's busy with business, it's going to take him out of his learning. You can't think that you'll get the best of both worlds. In our day and age, there are a lot of parents who encourage their kids, be like Uncle Jack. He's a prosperous lawyer and he's the gabbai in the shul. He's a fine Talmud Chacham. When you talk to Uncle Jack, you suddenly discover he's not the Talmud Chacham your grandmother thinks he is. It's nice that he balances being the gabbai in the shul or giving a parsha shir in the shul with his business. But to be a Talmud Chacham requires a lot of investment of time. So, I don't know, but this goes back to the balance. A person also has to have a parnasa. But a person should realize that if he's going to be too busy with doing business, it's going to take him out of his learning. And when there are no men, then you be the man. Now the question is, what does the word hishtadel mean? So the Rambam has an interesting answer. The Rambam explains the word hishtadel, not like modern Hebrew where hishtadel is try to be a man, but rather get accustomed to being a man. It's a matter of habit. Others translate the word hishtadel get accustomed to it. The Tosfos Yom Tov also goes with that explanation. So, it means a leader when there's no one to take control, to stand at the helm. Who's going to be the leader? So you have no choice, you be the leader. And sometimes you guys will find yourselves in situations like this. Every person has situations in his life where he's got to take control. It can be when you're in no man's land, when you're visiting your parents in Chutz La'aretz. It could be when you're in a community where there's no one there. It could be at the office where there's no one there. I have a friend who went to university, and a friend of his came over to him and says, look, I don't keep Shabbat, and now that I'm in university, I don't even get to go to shul on Shabbat, so I miss knowing what the parasha is. Do you mind giving a class on the parasha? I'll get another 2-3 guys to come. So the guy said, okay, that's what you want, fine. So in college, here, there's a story that's ongoing even now. He started during lunch break, he started a parasha class. The guy who asked for the class doesn't come anymore. But I hear he has a crowd between 50 and 100 people. Some keep Shabbat, some don't keep Shabbat. And he gives a simple parsha class. But during lunch, a lot of people gather around. And while they're eating lunch, they're happy to hear what stories and what ideas are in the parsha. Sometimes you don't have to be the chief rabbi. If you're just going to be there and you're going to fill in a gap that no one else is filling, you could be the man. You guys have opportunity now. I told you, you thought I was joking. But I said, during the break, you guys want class, give yourselves classes. Take turns, and each one of you will prepare something. And you could have class every day during the break, every morning. So one guy will prepare one thing, another guy will prepare a different thing. You'll get interesting classes. There's no reason not to. Every year until now, I used to give classes. This year, I'm not going to be here. But, you know, there's no one else. You do it. And if you can't get anyone else to do it, so you give class every day. There's nothing wrong with that. Maybe at the end you'll be a rabbi at Machon Meir. Never know. Okay. So, lo kapdan milamed. A person who's going to be kapdan, he can't teach. This is a balancing act in the home. It's a balancing act with your kids. Sometimes a person can feel like he's spending the whole day policeman. You know, don't do this and do that. Don't do this and do that. Pick up your toys, put away your pajamas. Don't hit your sister. Don't hit your brother. Don't eat with your hands. A person has to gauge himself and ask himself how tough he's being and how much of what he's saying is giving instructions, and how much of what he's saying is giving love. I always recommend that people make themselves rules. Make yourself a rule that the first 5 minutes after you woke up, you don't say anything but love. The first 5 minutes after each child wakes up, they don't get anything but love. The last 5 minutes before you leave the home, and the last 5 minutes before each child leaves the home, let them each leave on a good note. Or let you leave the house on a good note. And this can apply to a child, this can apply to a spouse. The first 5 minutes after a child walks in, the first 5 minutes after you walk in, the last 5 minutes before a child goes to sleep. If a person sets these as goals, so then at least the person has islands of areas of time where he knows that he's focusing only on doing the positive. And very often, coming off of those moments, off of those times, a person can learn from those times and see how during those times he was able to get the same and maybe more accomplished than during the other times when he was telling them what to do all the time. For example, if you need the kids to clean up before they go to bed and you just decided, I'm not going to tell them what to do, so you might come and say, okay, let's have a contest, who can put the most toys away in the next 5 minutes? You could do it in a fun way. You've lived up to your goal not to tell them anything during those 5 minutes, and it might work better. And there are all kinds of things like that. At least you're ensuring that they have these times each day where things are relatively calm. A person should also gauge what words he's using, what tones he's using a lot of the time, and that gives him a picture. This is true within marriage. This is true with conversations with parents. This is true with conversations with children. Lo kapdan milamed, and it's interesting that most people won't call themselves a kapdan. Most people will say, me no, I'm easygoing. Today it's common that people think easygoing is a compliment, so most people call themselves easygoing. So then who is and who isn't easygoing? It's hard to gauge. So at least listen to the words, the terms you're using, and what you're saying most of the time that you're spending with your children, with your spouse, with your parents. And then a person can set himself goals like this. Give himself times where he knows he's working differently. Yeah?
I noticed in Israel that it seems like the level of discipline in Israeli homes is a lot more loose than what I'm used to growing up in America. And I'm wondering, and I've thought about that because I can see pluses of it, I can see maybe minuses of it. How much do we try to follow the culture? Should we just, I mean, I'm thinking like, I think that maybe I'd be a little more strict with my kids than what I generally see. And I'm just wondering, would that be a bad idea? Because this isn't the same culture, it's a different culture. And do I want them to feel like they're more restricted? I don't know.
It's a balancing act. It depends on you and your spouse, and you'll have to really think it through. I can tell you that you're raising this now, and this morning my wife and I were discussing it again. This morning. So all our neighbors, I mean, I don't know if all, but I'd say 85% at least of the kids that live around our building, in our building, around our building, 85% of the kids, from the time they're about 3 or 4, cross the street without a parent. Now, you know what our street looks like. There's a curve there where cars can't see around. I mean, there are cars that will fly down and honk as they're flying down. So there was a time when we first moved in where I would actually go and knock and tell parents, you know, your kid just crossed the street without looking. Then I realized, you know, I could spend my whole day doing that. You know, so there are areas where you can't really say, you know, it's a culture thing. I guess, you know, kids can cross the street where cars can't see them crossing the street, and cars don't slow down, and there's no, like, speed bump, and I guess it's a culture thing. You can't. But then there are other areas where it's like borderline. And I think it's at every age and within every society, you have to gauge what the kid... Depends on a kid's temperament, what he's hearing from his friends, what he wants to do. We come back to the sponge example, right? I told you guys the sponge example. Life. My father always says life is like a sponge. When you have a sponge filled with water, you have to carry it very gently. If you squeeze it on one side, you might not get water coming out of that side, but you'll get water coming out of the other side. And it's the same thing here. It's a balancing act. So you might be able to get away with a certain amount of going with what you're accustomed to, but at some point, you're going to squeeze on one side, it'll come out on the other side. Either they won't be telling you, or they'll be resenting it, and it'll come out in a different place. So it's really something that requires constant thought. I'm telling you, my wife and I are right now in the middle of a conversation about this, contemplating where we should let up and where we should... stick to our guns, and it's a product of this very thing. Meaning, if we were living in the United States, I don't think we'd have this conversation, because where we come from, what we're doing is perfectly normal. But it's not here. You're right; it's not the norm here in Israel. I mean, parents can have. We have a neighbor that has 6 or 7 year old daughter who comes home every day and doesn't have a key, and the mother isn't home, so the kid just wanders for 45 minutes. 7-year-old kid, no one knows where she is. I don't know, that's not the norm where I come from. Okay. You know, to each their own. We're not about to tell other people what to do with their kids. But again, so your kids are going to see other kids outside, not being watched, and being allowed to do much more than you're going to feel comfortable letting them do. So that's already a biggie. So how many other biggies can they swallow and still be normal kids? It's a challenge. Then there's the question, will your wife be Israeli or like you? More than likely, you'll find someone who's similar to you. That's probably what's going to work best. If on your dates you will discuss chinuch issues, then chances are you'll have many similarities. In general, women are more willing to go with their husbands on this. Part of the reason is also because husbands are always convinced they're right. But at the end of the day, there's a lot to think about. I don't think there's any one formula here. But it is a good point. Yeah. It's one of the difficulties of Baruch Hashem making Aliyah. Yeah.
Is that something that you could differ with your wife on opinion?
You can differ about everything. You just got to figure out what the solution is. On the solution, you have to be equal. Differing is fine. If we're talking about within marriage, okay, so you differ, you figure it out. If you're talking about when you're dating, So then the question is, how far is our difference? Is it compatible? Meaning, is it going to be a friction point? Is it going to be like she's saying, you know, we live on a fourth floor, why don't you let the kids experiment with kites and see which one they could skydive with and which not? And you're like, we don't let them on the porch because who knows what could happen on a fourth floor porch? Then you realize you're very far from one another. Every issue has, you know, depends on how far you are from one another. This is, I think, it can be a biggie, but I also would imagine that a couple that's compatible on other fronts should be able to find some kind of compatibility here, even though it's going to be challenging because what usually happens is the wife is the one enforcing everything, and it's very hard for her to enforce what she doesn't believe in. You know? So that's a big challenge. And this, and the question is, how much will the husband be able to compromise? I'm not worried about how much she will compromise. I'm worried about how much the husband will compromise. Will the husband be able to compromise to the point that she can handle? That's my question. Meaning, the tendency of women is usually they compromise a lot. I'm more concerned about whether we, the men, are going to compromise as much as we should. And again, chinuch issues is an area where you try to find someone who you're more or less parallel with. It's very important that, you know, one of the main issues you should try to find that your concentric circles, if we're going to make a graph of where you're holding, it should be priorities, it should be chinuch. These are things that your whole life revolves around. So this is a minor point within chinuch. I'm saying the question is, what about the broader picture of chinuch? Yeah.
So, I have an idea of kind of chinuch that I want to apply with my kids, but I also think about it as, like, I don't have kids. I mean, I can have an idea of how I want to raise them, but I mean, I know the goal, but like the actual practicality, I've never raised kids before, so... You're saying it's a really important thing that you find somebody who's parallel to you. Maybe like I'll find that when I have kids that I'll feel very different.
That's true. That's always the challenge of dating in theory. One of the things that I tried to do when I was dating was to go with the girls to parks and see parents and kids. And then when you see things happening in front of your eyes, so then you can discuss it. You see the way kids play. You see what kids do and how parents react to what kids do. I always tried to have some dates with a girl in parks where we'd actually see, you know, chinuch issues in front of our eyes and discuss them.
That's considered toilet.
Yeah, you don't know who you're talking about anyways. It's not like you're saying, you know, this mother's crazy and that mother's great. You don't know who they are, you know. I don't think also you have to discuss so much she's crazy and she's great. You have to discuss more how did I grow up and what do I think about how a child should be brought up. I saw many fantastic things during the times at the parks, you know, things that really very interesting. Again, being an American in Israeli culture, it was a real shocker to me, but yeah, there was a lot to talk about. Really, I mean, things I wouldn't have believed, but okay, say there. It gives you room to talk. It's also good to invent stories or to share stories that you see at Shabbos tables where you visit. I used to try and collect stories on the dates. I'd bring up stories. You know, I was a Shabbos here. I wouldn't say where. I was at a Shabbos and I saw this and this at the table or that at the table. Do kids come to the Shabbos table with pajamas or not? Do you let the kids go away in the middle of the meal and go and sit down and play? You know, small questions, but they reflect on a certain attitude, on what's the attitude to eating, what's the attitude to helping the mother in the kitchen, what's all kinds of questions which you start noticing as you see different Shabbos tables.
The question is, are you bringing up on dates or the
marriage? No, on dates.
A lot of people don't even know.
Okay,
you have an idea, and then when it's reality,
fine, okay, but that's what you could deal with. You have to deal with the theory. I would definitely bring it up on dates, for sure. It's a major point, you know. What are you getting married for? Not to bring up kids, you know. Obviously, you'll have your relationship, but you got to talk about the chinuch for sure. Even these examples, for sure. There are many things I said I didn't have an opinion on. You don't have to have an opinion, but hear her opinion. You might buy into it, you might not buy into it. So you don't know. That's legitimate. She might not know either. That's also legitimate.
She has an opinion, and then the reality comes and it's like completely mind-blowing and shocking, and having 8 kids is a lot more difficult than this stuff is. So now you're like, wait, this is not what you told me.
I rely on you guys to be intelligent enough that that's not what's going to happen. Okay, yeah, you live and you learn, but at least you know where you want to be headed. That's a big thing. That's yeah.
So if a woman couldn't have children, should she still get married?
If a woman could not have children, of course she should get married, probably she might want to find a shidduch of someone who either is older or there are younger guys who don't want kids either for whatever reason. Gotta be fair. But she should consult with her local Orthodox rabbi when that information should be given over. That's a good question. Yeah.
If I were to just be on my first date with some girl, she goes, all right, let's talk about kids. I think, hey, so at what point are you, is it when you're thinking maybe this really is the girl I want to marry? Then you try to slide it in there,
See, there are two ways you could do this. You could have this discussion, if we have kids, do you think they'll be blonde with blue eyes? And that's a way which maybe should be after engagement, right? Or you can discuss things in the abstract, and if you happen to be walking in the Rova, you could sit down, and many benches are by parks, and you could discuss things, and you could bring things up in a way that's not like when we have kids, but rather, I saw this and this that happened at a Shabbos table, and I was wondering, what do you think about it? I don't think it has to be like that. There's a question that girls don't like, which is, what do you think your Shabbos table will look like? That's like, I don't get the point of such a general question. But I think that after the first 2 dates, you discussed all kinds of what you believe and where you come from and who you are and who she is. At some point, third date, fifth date, seventh date, depending on how it flows. But I don't think it should be in a way that's so obviously we've advanced to this stage. I don't think that's the point.
Because I think some of these women, I have a feeling they view you as just a means to start popping out kids, and they don't, I don't know, it's a weird thing with women like that. And, so you should just judge it by the particular case you're in, and after you get through, get really a couple dates in, that we would do soon.
Well,
and if she really,
if it seems too soon, so wait a little longer.
I don't know. I guess I'll just
say. Tom.